When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the Goldmine Podcast. This is editor Pat Prince, and Goldmine is the music collector's magazine since 1974. This episode of the podcast, we have as guests the founders of Analogger, Thomas Scriven and Francis Porter. And Analogger has really made its space in the auction arena. It's spelled A-N-A-L-O-G-R, and you could go to analogger.com to find out more about the company. But with the Analogger guys, we have longtime Beatles collector Tom Fontaine as a guest too. All of us got together on February 7th and did an interview for an online article for goldminemag.com. And we also went on, because we wanted to talk more, and did this separate podcast. Why did we get together on February 7th? Because it was the 60th anniversary of the Beatles landing at JFK in America. And also on that day, Analogger and Tom wanted to announce the Beatles auction, this Beatles auction that we're going to be talking about. It's called the Beatles Experience, which is the mass Beatles collection of Tom Fontaine. It's being auctioned off and is highlighted really by an autographed rare photo by Pan Am of the Beatles at JFK on that day that is quite rare, which Tom will explain why in this episode. I mean, it's funny, during the podcast episode that we did, they all gave me a little show and tell of all these other items in the auction as well. Like a really cool John Lennon drawing, different drawings, handwritten lyrics by Paul McCartney and George Harrison. They even talk about a desk and chair from John Lennon's childhood. Again, you could see all these items online at analogger.com. The auction is in a preview state, and the gang are also hosting various events to make this a community thing for Beatles fans and collectors. For instance, on Sunday, February 25th, they hosted a live event with Chris Carter from Breakfast with the Beatles. A lot of Beatles fans know who he is, and at the Hard Rock in Hollywood next to the renowned Chinese Theater. And then on March 2nd, they're holding another event at the Auction House's Glendale, California showroom, featuring a Q&A session and a guided tour of the collection. The auction kicks off with a preliminary bidding on March 2nd. But anyway, we'll return after a short break. The Analogger team will be with us and Tom Fontaine to explain the auction more and get the backstories on different Beatles items. It's really a must listen for rock fans and, of course, Beatles collectors. Be right back.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, welcome, guys. So we got Francis, Thomas, and Tom. Okay, great. I guess the best way to do this, usually I do a one-on-one with a podcast, but maybe what I'll do is just each one of you can kind of introduce yourself. Maybe we'll start with the analogers.
Great. My name is Thomas Scriven. I am a founder of Analogger.
My name is Francis Porter. I'm a co-founder of Analogger.
My name is Tom Fontaine, and I am been a collector since I was 5 years old, and I am now 65.
Die hard.
I'm also an author, and I as well too. Right.
Well, maybe you could. Okay, so let's start about everything Beatles. Maybe you can describe the event, what's coming up. Maybe we'll start with the Analogger guys.
Sure. So we have a location in Glendale. We specialize working with estates and collectors on telling the story about their assets. And we believe our process helps make them investment grade. And so we've been working with Tom for several years, probably been about 3 years since we began this process with him. And this is our very first event that we're doing around his Beatles collection. Tom has a collection that spans from ABBA to Zappa. He is really well known in circles as you know, being a lifetime collector and also an authenticator and a Beatles expert. So we're making the announcement about the collection, this part of the collection going live. And then we have here at our showroom on March 2nd, we're doing another event, which will, you know, have a Q&A, and then we'll also take people through the collection that we have here. The auction will be live on, it goes live on the 7th, which is preliminary bidding. And then it's actually goes into timed rounds starting on February 29th. So that's what we're up to. We're really excited about this. We put a lot of time and work into it. And honestly, this is just the very beginning of many, because Tom has a prolific collection and he is, just a joy to work with. We're so thrilled to do this.
Yeah, I was looking over the collection. What I love about it, it's something for everyone, something for every collector, meaning if someone's got a small budget or a very large one. And, you know, as a guy who collects myself, I can't afford, you know, sometimes you get these auctions, right? You feel like you're at a car show. You can only look, and you can't afford, right? Can't afford to get it. But here I see I can afford to get some of these things, you know, which I think, you know, you get collectors in all shapes and sizes. So maybe Thomas, we could talk a little bit about how you started becoming a Beatle collector. I always love these stories because, you know, it seems like everyone loves the Beatles, right? But why does one start to collect the Beatles? That's the story I like.
Well, I appreciate the you asking me, because it's very interesting how it all started. It started in the summer of 1964. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, and there was a heavy-duty rainstorm, and there was a couple girls running for cover, and all of a sudden a bunch of cards flew out of their hands. And next thing I know, I saw them all laying there, and after the rain stopped, I went ahead and picked them all up and put them on a register to try to heat them up in the summer, which is smart. But I did it anyway, and it was the Beatles cards. And so once I saw those, I asked my mother, because my Uncle Johnny had a private grocery, had a public, private grocery store, and just a small one, not a private one. But anyway, I had asked him, he said, I showed the cards to him, and he goes, "Oh, that's those darn Beatle cards the girls are buying." And I go, "Well, I would like to get them too." So what I did was, through the entire summer, I went ahead and he put about 10 or 12 packs of cards in there. And once I started really kind of collecting them, I went down to my local local drugstore and started buying magazines. And from there, I just was just a major Beatles fan. And so anything I heard about the Beatles, I would also talk to my parents about it, because they really didn't know all that much about them. So technically what I did was, my mother, my father, my brother, I turned my whole family on to the Beatles. So it was a Beatles house by the time I got to stop talking, because I was always very enthusiastic about everything that I did when I collected, and I still am today. I feel like I'm still that five-year-old kid, the six-year-old kid to pick up those Beatle cards. So, but that's how it all started. And then obviously over the years, you progress from the records to memorabilia. And I was a big video man. I love to see old things of the Beatles when they were on video and stuff. And then it just progressed and progressed to the collection that I've had over the last 25 years.
So where are those Beatles cards now?
I have two or three of them, and they're still riggedy. But what I did was, I did end up getting the rest of the sets and everything like that. Matter of fact, my original collection is at Beatles cards are over at Analogger right now. And they got my cards too, man. These are my guys.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It was a very, very long, arduous process to let these things go, and for us to be entrusted to be the stewards of these things. But
appreciate the trust. And I'll tell you, I'd like to add what he was saying is that over the years, I've had several auction companies, and everything like that have wanted to represent my collection and things like that. But nothing really, really fit until I got the call from Thomas and we started talking. And when I knew that they were very serious is because they took the time and the effort to come to Indianapolis and see and meet my wife, Mary, and I, and just really just treated us so well. And they knew what my vision was. My vision has always been the backstory of an item, because that's how I collected. And they love that vision, and it just kind of mixed together. And I couldn't be more proud to be a part of this team.
Yeah, they're an exciting company. And one thing I want to get back to is, every time I ask this question to a collector that is auctioning off their collection, it usually is because, well, I got to size it down, retiring. And one thing they often say is, I'm going to bring joy to someone else's life, because some collector is going to buy this and that's going to bring joy to them. Do you have the same sort of philosophy?
Without a doubt. I mean, the one thing about it is, when you collect, you really enjoy it and everything. And then there is a time, and especially at the age I'm at now, it is time for someone else to enjoy the memories and the preservation of having these incredible artifacts intact and didn't get thrown away from the attic or anything like that. And so, it is time for other people to own these. And I will tell you this though, Pat, it took a lot I mean, even the fact is that I was in the process of doing all this, I finally had to tell myself it is time for, you know, other people to enjoy this. And like I said, the cool part about this, what we're doing, is we can tell a lot of the backstories and things like that. Because there's some, I mean, I've had so many incredible stories on how I ended getting things and got them directly from the people who met the Beatles themselves and everything like that. So, yeah, we're really, really excited about this.
And I'm noticing here that you talked about 1964, and I'm seeing some of the items here, the the bobblehead dolls, right? The Caboodle kit. So those are original. Those are when you bought. Those are things you bought as a kid.
Well, some things I did buy as a kid that's in this collection, but other things, as I said earlier, I started progressing to buy magazines and things. But I will say, you know, one thing is, Pat, I'm a collector. I'm always going to probably buy something. And so therefore, if something always comes my way that is something that I may not have had or anything like that, I'll get it. But I must admit, I haven't bought like the toys. That was probably the last 20 years ago, probably. But now they're there, including, by the way, also too, I wanted to tell you, when you mentioned about the Caboodle kit and the bobbing heads, we also have the Beatles record player. And collectors know that that is like the, in those days, that was like the holy grail of Beatles collectibles.
Right.
I mean, you know, and it displays incredible. And I got to tell you, the only way you can display it is put the original Capitol Swirl, I Want to Hold Your Hand on it. And it just, it just fits it. And that's how we actually were going to be presenting it at the sale.
I wanted to ask you about some of the, first of all, what do you consider here to be the holy grail now in this collection that is being auctioned?
Well, I would have
I know that's
to say,
a tough question, but what do you think?
No, and it's an absolutely fair question. There are some really, really incredible one of a kind items in this event. And I mean, things come to my mind, you know, you always can't go wrong with handwritten lyrics. I mean, you know, having something handwritten by a Beatle, which we do have, is with the Paul McCartney goodbye lyric, and then the George Harrison While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Well, what they did in May of 1968, and you might know this, John and Paul came to New York, announced Apple. And once they did, and they were after, when they got back to England, they basically got some artists, including James Taylor, and for one. And then also they were very high on Mary Hopkins, especially Paul. So Paul went into the studio. Well, what he did was he wrote the song Goodbye, which is considered a Lennon McCartney composition. And he gave this to Mary Hopkin to record, but he went through the entire process. So not only did he basically, as you see, he pinned the draft down of the lyrics, he also puts the chord structures above it. Because that's what a lot of things what Paul would do. He would work on chord structures besides the lyrics. So this is the actual first draft for Goodbye. And Mary Hopkin recorded it. And if you see the video, you'll see Mary and Paul in the studio as well on the video. So, but the real cool thing about this, though, Pat, is there was an Abbey Road box set that came out a few years ago. And Paul put his entire full script of Goodbye on the same Apple stationery, and you can just see how it continued to flow as he was writing this. So one thing about it is, with me, I think first drafts are incredible, because that was the first thing that crossed their mind when they basically pinned it down.
Yeah, it's got collectors are into the minutiae. I love how that's some cool stationery. You know?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It's not like it's on a napkin or anything. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that lyric itself has actually been published in Beatles magazines. And you can see, I think it's on the corner of one of the magazines, and it said, oh my gosh, there's the lyric. It's pretty cool. But I will tell you this also too, if I can share this, Pat, is that what we are doing is something a little bit different. We are putting ensembles together that basically complement the item themselves. But we also have the 45, we have this incredible award that was given to Mary Hopkin. And then we also have the sheet music, and that is the package. So you almost have your little mini display that you can have related to this. And actually we have provided that with other items as well too.
Yeah.
Now, I also like some of the attire here. You got a George Harrison jacket, the blue velvet jacket. And
if you look what this is now, this is an interesting thing about the George jacket. This was from Madame Tussauds. If you go what happened was when the Beatles were doing, Madame Tussauds was changing their statues every year because obviously Beatles were the trend. Whatever the Beatles were doing, everybody else was following. So therefore, that's why they had changes. So what they did, they would ask John, Paul, George, and Ringo if they would donate some of their clothing. I mean, the early ones had their posh suits, the milling suits and things like that from their early days. But they also had their own clothing. Like, for instance, this George Harrison is from Lord John's on Carnaby Street. Right. You know, that's where George shopped, so what we will show is we have a picture of George, George's statue or mannequin, and the jacket is he's wearing the jacket, which is really, really cool. But that's how they got the clothing. They got the clothing from the Beatles themselves.
Wow.
That's which really cool. Makes this really, really cool and so interesting for a collector to own. Own a piece of the Beatles, man. I mean, that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, because they're during that stage, like you said, the Carnaby Street stage, they wore some pretty cool clothing, a lot different from when they first began. And that's what makes it so interesting. I guess if you want to call it groovy colors, but some of the stuff was kind of out there, right? So, I wanted to check that out. I thought that was pretty interesting. And I also thought, when you talk about this, it says here display only for event, but the George Harrison suit jacket on an Ed Sullivan performance. See, stuff like that that has a historical bent to it is really nice. That is very cool. That's like museum type stuff right there.
Well, the thing is that when you go through and you actually visually see these, like online and everything, you're going to say that on a lot of them. There's a lot of things that could be in a museum, and I'm not bragging on this. I'm very proud of it because be the owner of these incredible items that can now basically be sent out to museums, collectors, and everything like that. Is absolutely fantastic. And you did mention real quickly, you mentioned about the clothing. We also have John Lennon's psychedelic robe. Mm. And so therefore it has all these little colors that you were kind of talking about. And if you're familiar with the Dot Jarlett family, Dot Jarlett was John's housekeeper, and several clothings were given to Dot and the family by John. Matter of fact, the famous coat from Rubber Soul, where John's on Rubber Soul, that was actually Dot Jarlett had that, and of course a collector ended up purchasing that. But Dot's name is like gold in the field of John Lennon ownership of clothing and things like that. So and that's really what's important here, is to know the fact is that you have the story, the backstory, the documentation, and everything like that as a major comfort level to own these incredible items.
Yeah. And this, for the analogger guys, I think what you're fortunate to have Tom's collection as a whole, because a lot of times in auctions, you see the Beatles stuff kind of placed in with all the rest. It's like a classic rock auction, or I like it when it's more thematic. I never hear back from the auctions if that seems to do better than the ones that are all, mix and match, but I think these kind of auctions do a lot better.
Yeah. Well, so we just did a Grateful Dead auction, and we're doing another one now that they're announcing the Sphere shows in May. We're doing it in May.
Yes.
Yeah. That was really, cause we work with, people that were there, people that were part of the crew. You know, when we had our event in downtown, we had a lot of the legal and business affairs side of the Dead show up. Like, it was perfect. So bringing those types of communities are exactly what we're looking to do here with the Beatles. And that's why the Chris Carter inclusion and, you know, these Q&A guests that we're going to be really happy to announce when we can. We're doing everything to bring the community of the Beatles into this. I actually pulled a couple things, Tom, that I can put up on screen if you want to talk a little bit more about them, because some of these things are just really extremely rare. So this one.
Yeah, that is original sheet music of While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And the entire sheet is actually filled out all by George Harrison, including the chord structures, the verse, everything is all by him. And how this came to be about, George and Eric Clapton did that Live in Japan tour. And then there was going to be a book put, there was a book put out by Genesis Publications. And it was going to be as with the same title, Live in Japan. Well, George Harrison actually went over to the printing company where the book was being done, and he brought the sheet music over and, you know, just basically talked to him and said, you know, we want to try to have this in there for the book and everything. And what's really, really cool, and then this is the backstory part about it is, too, is while George was there, he visited with them. They had drinks and stuff like that. And then at the same time, when he brought that sheet music, they brought out the original proof, big proofs of the book. And there was this great shot of George from the Live in Japan. And George was kindly signed it to the guy who was basically who was running the shop. And so, and what happened was years later, they located the sheet music, and this is how it happened and how we were able to have this, how I owned it, and how it's being offered now to that special collector who wants this. I mean, let's face it, While My Guitar Gently Weeps is almost a George Harrison signature song anyway. But mm-hmm. to have the sheet music and the chord structures, those were put together for the musicians, because when they wanted to make sure that who was on stage besides Eric and George, that the backup musicians would know the song. And so very, very seldom if you see something penned by George. Now, there's not a lot of George writing on there. The title is there. But having all the chord structures on there is almost kind of like similar to what Paul McCartney does on his lyrics. So this is just a real special, special item.
Any yeah. more show and tell? Is there more stuff
yeah.
you can?
Yeah, we have a handful of things we can show well, you.
And keep in mind, we have thousands of items of Tom's.
So Tom, tell us a little bit about this. So when we were, okay, so why are we announcing on February 7th, Tom?
Well, while we're announcing on February 7th, obviously it's they're celebrating the 60th anniversary of the day the Beatles arrived on, you know, on Pan Am 101 Boeing 707. And obviously, as you all know, and we've seen this on film and everything like that, right after the Beatles came down, they had this impromptu press conference at Pan Am. And, you know, the interesting thing about this photo is obviously that's the shot of them there. But I always kind of say the fact is, I really honestly think that the press and the photographers were hoping that these guys were not going to, you know, they just weren't going to be, they didn't know if this was going to be a really, really good group or anything like that, because they're coming from the UK. But I will say this, and I'm sure you probably know this, they were so well polished in 1963 when they were doing their flipping answers and press conference and everything like that. So when they got to Pan Am, they were ready. And so, but what Thomas was showing you, which is such an interesting photo, is the fact is this Pan Am photo is actually shot by Pan Am. Hmm. And so this was like completely off the presses. And then the next day, and you've seen this in Beatle cards and magazines and stuff, you only saw John, Paul, and Ringo, because, you know, George was ill. He was at the Plaza basically getting taken care of by the doctor. So that's why you always see these publicity photos with just the three of them. Well, that day they got the photo signed by John, Paul, and Ringo. And that's why George is not on there and everything. But this is a one-of-a-kind photo, Pat, from Pan Am themselves, signed by the three of them. Now, what we did as a compliment, because I had a Pan Am luggage ticket, it's also signed by George Harrison. So we've put together a nice ensemble. The photo itself, though, is so extremely, extremely rare. And it's for them arriving in America, that was the first place they went to. And having that sign at that Pan Am press conference image the next day is very, very historical, especially celebrating the 60th anniversary.
Right. What did Pan Am, did they send out this photo? Did they get many printed and send it out to the press, or did that not happen?
I'll tell you what, Pat, the only thing I can say, it's the, you know, as I've been doing this for years and years as an historian as well, I mean, because that's what I did. I mean, I like a lot of the history of the Beatles as well. I've never seen another one. And there's never been one signed. But yeah. I haven't seen that image either.
And there's different variations of these photographs that have shown up, but not this actual image.
Yeah. And I will tell you this, Pat. You remember I mentioned to you about like an ensemble type of thing? What we want to add to it? Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, when the day the Beatles signed that was the time they went to Central Park. What we are adding with this photo and the tag is an original Dizzo Hoffman photo of the three of them at Central Park. And Dizzo was like the photographer the Beatles hired for their trip to their first visit to America. So we're adding that as well. And that has a rarity in itself because there's not a lot of Dizzo Hoffman photos out there. But we wanted to add this because we wanted to show them the day that photo was signed.
Very cool. Now, also I wanted to ask you, okay, say we talked about how some of the larger ticket items, but say I'm a collector, Beatles collector, and I've only got, a few $100, like $500 and under, say. What would you, if you had to advise me, what should I jump on? Not just as a, you'd say it's an investment too, right? But as a Beatles fan and someone who wants to invest, is there something, one thing in particular that you would advise to look out for this?
Well, what I did when we put this collection out there, you said it right in the very beginning. I mean, this is a family friendly event, and so excuse me. There's some incredible posters from the 70s that people have not seen for a long time, including actually the promotional. The promotional poster for Ram. That is probably one of the rare posters of all four of the Beatles. We have that there. And also too, there's also cool magazines, man, that came from right when the Beatles were there in 64. New York really, really put out together some very, very, there's the Ram poster. And that's something that would be really cool to hang up on the wall because it's Fresh McCartney, Ram. People love Ram. But getting back to those magazines, those are we're starting those under $100.
Right.
And yeah. I mean, I want people to be excited about this. We want everybody to just enjoy what we're trying to present here.
Yeah, I've seen some of those magazines and collectors really cherish those. What's that? What's that now you're holding?
Oh, okay, well, this is not here. This is a poster that when John and Yoko did an exhibit at the Everson Museum in Syracuse, it started on John's birthday, and Yoko wanted to start it on John's birthday as a gift, and they both appeared at the event. And so this is not here posters were there, but a lot of people did not show up on that day. So a lot of the posters, if they would ask them to get signed, they would get them signed. But there's only about less than probably 10 or 11 that ever survived. The rest of those posters, unfortunately, got thrown in the trash. So at those days, maybe people wanted to see the exhibit and didn't really want John and Yoko's autograph. But the other cool thing about this is also notary stamped as well, too, right on the black part of the poster. And that's how they were. But this is a very, very rare poster because
1974, by the way, 1974.
Actually, Tom, it's 1971.
Yeah, sorry.
And so it was. You know what? He's right. What that means is when you see a 1974, when someone is putting the stamp onto it, that's the length of their expiration when they do a notarize. So I can understand when Thomas saw the 74, but most of the time when those are on there, that's when their time is up as far as being a notarizer. So, but anyway, I was going to say, and that's an incredible poster and a true, you know, last time I've only seen like one or two advertised within the last 15, 20 years. And this one is really great. It's a really nice. Oh, okay. Here we go. Next. All right. Well, anyway, in 1976 and 1972, 1977, for about a month, John Lennon attended a language arts class in New York City. And the reason why he attended that class, and a lot of people did not even know he even did this, but what he did was he wanted to learn Japanese writing. And because him and Sean and Yoko were going to be going to Japan later on that year. So this was his way in Lennon's way, because he always did a lot of drawing. He went to language arts class and created these incredible drawings that are just, I mean, and this one, personally, in my opinion, I would say this is the best one because it has so much detail. John basically is drawing himself. Are these ghosts or are these fans? Is he trying to walk out the door because he's being scared? So that's why he calls this dream number two. Right. So this is John's dream. And as he's sitting at the language arts class doing this, and then he also titled it in Japanese well too. I think it's Tori Masu or something like that. But what also really, really kind of puts the topper to this one of a kind drawing is that Yoko actually saw it. Slide on over a little bit. Oh, and basically here's what it tells on the back with John Lennon, New York City language arts class. But in 2007, Yoko Ono signed the back of the drawing. So therefore you've got Yoko's signature on the front, and then you got John's drawing from the 70s on the back, and then John's drawings from the 70s in the front. But I will tell you this is there are not a lot of John Lennon drawings out there. There was from the bed-ins and things like that. But a lot of people didn't even know about this language arts class, and a few of those drawings have surfaced out there. But this one, I think, is actually the best one. And I will tell you this, I can say as a footnote, if I can, just, you know, for people to listen or anything like that, because it's in my books as well. I was hired to authenticate 35 John Lennon drawings from three different companies for this gentleman. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, obviously, because what we're talking about now and these incredible items and everything, I authenticated 34 out of 35 were not real. Wow. And then they took it to a forensics expert. And basically, and then he contacted me back and he said, you were 100% correct. And he was able to basically get his money back on all those drawings. And the reason why I bring that up is the fact is that when you're working with, you know, these very high-end items and everything like that, you have to have a comfort level. And so therefore, that's why when I have the backstories and everything like that, I can really, really, really tell what, you know, what's going on. And with my background of writing books and actually doing an actual Beatles autograph study, people can come to me on with this event and they will feel comfortable owning these incredible items on their walls, on their desk or everything like that, or even in their bookcase.
So what? Pat, at some point in time, we're going to publish the Beatles autograph study that Tom did.
And
people use it in the circle of authentication quite often. Right. We're gonna actually put the stamp on it. There are two more things that I definitely want Tom to talk about. One of them is the John Lennon childhood desk and chair. And then the second one will be the Brian doc. So if you want to start about the desk and chair, and then also the paperwork surrounding Aunt Mimi's place that goes with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you what, Pat, this is really, really an incredible artifact that you mentioned about could be in the Smithsonian. This one could be in the Smithsonian. Well, I'll give you the story on it. In 1965, John Lennon bought a home for his beloved Aunt Mimi, who everybody knows Mimi Smith and everything like that. And she pretty much raised John in between. You know, Julia was around as well, too. But Mimi was the main person who basically John lived with and everything. And so he purchased his house in 1965 for her. And so anyway, there was this desk and chair was in John's sitting room. And for years and years. And how this came about was when Mimi was getting very, very ill, she had hired this company called the Varco Agency. And it was a mother and daughter nursing that would take care of Mimi daily. And so it was Marjorie and it was Lynn. And so what happened was how this desk and chair happened was when Mimi, before Mimi passed away and all the great work that they were doing for her, Mimi gave them two items. The desk and chair was given to Marjorie, and the other item was given to Lynn. And I know you're going to know about this, and if I say it wrong the wrong way, but remember that saying where they said a guitar's all right, John, but you'll never make a living out of it. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a plaque that Mimi gave to John, you know, sarcastically, whatever you want to call it. Mimi gave that to Lynn, and then Marjorie got the desk and chair. And so, but what's really, really nice about this, I was able to locate and get Marjorie and Lynn both to tell their stories, to confirm the desk and chair and everything like that, because they were there. And then the one last thing I want to say about the thing with Mimi, when Lynn was writing the note up and everything like that about the desk and chair, which will also is included with all this, she basically said that right before Mimi died, she looked up in the corner and she said, "Hello, John," and peacefully passed away. That's inside things that was not on the Inquirers, in magazines or anything like that. That was directly from Lynn herself. And these two ladies just took care of her. But what we've done with this in my research, what I did was, I'm a collector, as we know, I was able to locate the original paperwork of the purchase that John, when he bought the house from Mimi. And it tells about all the rooms that are in there and everything like that. So you not only get the desk and chair, you get the original paperwork that John, when he bought the house. Now John has not signed that. These are documents. They are actually signed, but it's just the purchase of the house. But then you've got this incredible memory and stories from Marjorie and Lynn that basically tells inside things that nobody else would have ever known.
Right, that's incredible. You got that. Now the other thing was from, you said Brian Epstein something. What is that now? I'm trying to look at
it. What that is it's a document.
Are they stills?
Yeah, where Brian is signing his car off on August 17th, 1967. As you well know, that's 10 days before he died.
Right.
So, but this could be the very, very last document of Brian Epstein that was going to NEMS and eventually went to his brother, Clive Epstein. But 10 days before he died, he lets his car go. And everybody always wants to know, when Brian died, was it suicide or was it accidental? But this document may shed a little bit of light on that. We're not making any kind of statements on that, but we also are showing that Brian did sign it 10 days before he died. And I'm kind of guessing that was the very last document he ever signed.
Yeah, that's kind of poignant.
Yeah, it's it passes from Brian to Nems and then from Nems to Clive. Mm. So 67, 68.
Now, one thing that, you know, kind of amazes me, and I think that, you know, if you're going into this as a Beatles fan or even just an investor, Beatles, the popularity of the Beatles will probably last, you know, another 50, 100 years or forever. Where it just seems like, you know, kids are into the Beatles now, you know?
Yeah.
And I know there was an Elvis doc and everything, but you don't see that kind of stuff for even Elvis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, true. Especially out for sale. But the one thing about it is, you mentioned it was really important, is that to keep this memory alive, and people and these kids want to know about it.
Yeah.
And that's one thing about it is that, you know, I'm an open book on the Beatles. And if they want to ask questions or anything like that, you know, we want to educate. I mean, that was a lot of things that when I decided to, you know, to part with all these things and they're going to go into different people's hands, I wanted to let them feel the history I have. But it's also, too, as I've talked to you about just now about the Lennon desk and chair, is as you can tell, I mean, I'm so passionate about all this. I mean, you know, I think that brings it out. You know, I mean, I've done exhibits before and things like that. And my wife has told me, she said, Tom, when you start talking about things, they kind of gather around, you know, they might be looking around and stuff, but they want to hear what you have to say. And the nice part about it is Thomas and Francis has given me the voice to be able to do what I've always wanted to do.
Well, Mr. Fontaine, it's been a pleasure. It's been an honor. Are you writing another book? What's going on?
Is it okay for me to show this to you?
Sure.
Well, what this is, this is a book. It's called The Beatles Looking Back, The Final Trip.
Okay.
And the reason why I did the book and these, every single item in this book, Pat, I owned. They were once owned by me. So this is kind of my legacy book. But I will also tell you also, this will be the absolute best autograph study of the Beatles from the beginning to the end that you will ever see. Because every single page in here, from the Royal Command performance programs to drawings to, you know, I mean, I can go on and on from 67, John's suit from you know, that famous shot of them in their jumper suits.
Yeah.
I would get that.
I would definitely buy that. One of my most cherished books now is, you ever see the Bill Wyman memorabilia book?
I've heard about it, but I haven't had a chance.
So this sounds like that. Yeah, I love stuff like that.
I will tell you this, is that the foreword is by Chris O'Dell. Who, mm-hmm. if you remember her name, she was Miss O'Dell, George Harrison on the flip side of Give Me Love. But she also worked with the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and Bob Dylan. And she did the foreword of my book. And so I'm real proud of that, of course, as well. But the nice thing about this is this, we are doing a limited run of 100 of these large style books. And I'm going to sign all of them. And we're going to have those at all these different events that's leading up to, you know, to the sale and everything like that. But, you know, so, but right now they're being printed, and once we get them, then they'll be available. But yeah, I'll tell you what, Pat, I guarantee you would love this book. I guarantee.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I could see another interview coming just talking about that.
I would welcome it. Cause as you could tell, I'm not shy about talking about the Beatles. So
I got to get the book first.
There you go.
There are many well-known pieces that Tom has had throughout his career as a collector that are staples, that are in museums, that are, you know, pieces now.
Yeah. I mean, I had the last contract of with Brian Epstein, the Beatles and Clive from 1967. It was sold about 15, 20 years ago. But see, that's why I wanted to do this, Paz, because, I mean, you know, when you do all the effort and research and everything like that, I do for just one item. I mean, every item to me always is going to have some kind of a research to get the story behind it as much as I can. I wanted to put together this book as two things. Number one was in my mind is my legacy part one. Hopefully I'll have a legacy part two later, but also two, this is an incredible autograph study for collectors who really want to learn about the Beatles and everything like that whenever they feel comfortable buying anything.
Well, I always like to ask, super fans, super collectors, this question. Did you ever get to meet the members of the Beatles?
Can I share the story with you? It's a couple minutes, but I'll try to do as best as I can the short story of it. But in 1989, when Ringo was doing his all-star band for his first all-star band, he opened up in Dallas, Texas. And we found out it was going to be in Chicago. His next stop was going to be in Chicago, and I'm from Indianapolis. So what I did was one of the guys from Dallas who worked at the airport gave me, and he was a friend of mine, told me, he says, he gave me the flight number and everything where Ringo was going to be. So what I did was I skipped work and I drove up to O'Hare. And we waited, and there was a couple other people there. There were a couple other people there, and I was looking at them. They were looking at me, and I said, "You here for Ringo?" And they said, yeah. I said, "Okay, very cool." You know, so anyway, Ringo comes off the plane, and obviously our first reaction is to bring something up to him to sign. And he says to me, and I'll never forget it. He said, "Not now." And I don't know what it was, Pat, but it must have been a 40 year expression of disappointment that he saw on my face. Because what happened was he stopped his whole entourage, and Barbara was with him. And all of a sudden he says, "Come on, walk with me." So I walked with Ringo Starr and Barbara Bach through the entire airport. And it was so funny because there were stewardesses saying, "That's Ringo Starr and Barbara Bach, but who's that guy in the T-shirt and shorts?" You know, short pants and stuff. And so anyway, and he was really getting into it. And I said, I can't tell you how much this means to me. And he goes, no, it's a pleasure. And so he did. He walked all the way through the airport, and then they went into this van. And then all of a sudden it was like me and him. And he says, "Now give me whatever you want me to sign." Mm. And he did. He signed it for me and everything like that. And I called my wife right afterwards. And then I got so excited about it, I taped it when I got home, so it was still in my head. I didn't realize back from 30 something years later, I could tell you exactly what happened that day, but I just wanted to put it on tape. But that was my meeting of Ringo. And then the only other time I saw him in concert, and I had this big Beatles shirt on from the last photo session. Well, he comes off the van, and I walk up to him, and I was going in the car because I thought, well, I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to get something signed or not. I walk up, comes out of the van, grabs my pen, signs for me. He only signs for one other item until he goes in to rehearse. Mm. And what happened was, I said, this one will be hard to explain. About a month later at the Beatle Fest, the one guy says to me, "You're the guy with the shirt." And I go, "What are you talking about?" He goes, how do you know Ringo?" And I said, "You saw that?" He goes, "No, me and my buddy filmed it." So what they did was they were kind enough to give me the film, and it shows me walking out the van, him signing my autograph and going in. So those are my meeting of them. And then I wrote to George and I wrote to Paul, and they were kind enough to send me back some signed material.
I'm very curious what they would think of this collection.
Yeah, I mean, true. I mean, you know, the one thing about it is, I think when you know, as much work and everything like that, and over the years that I've done this, and what's really cool about this is some of these things have never been seen before because I really never really ever put them out there before. But right. I did do a book a few years ago that highlighted the Beatles along with some of the other artists that we might talk about later on. But it's going to be a great time. And like I said, I appreciate all the great questions you've asked me. Like I said, you can see, I just kind of boom, you know?
Yeah. So it was fun. Well, thank you so much, and good luck with the auction. I know it will do well. I mean, all Beatles auctions do well, but this one's very special. And we'll talk to everyone soon. We'll talk after the auction, and I definitely want to talk about that book.
Oh, so, I look forward to it, and I really appreciate that opportunity as well.
All right, thank you, guys. Any last words? Did you want to say something?
Sure. I just from Analogger to Goldmine, like, thank you so much for doing what you guys do. Thank you for supporting this with Tom, Tom's family to us.
Yeah.
And we're thrilled about this. And to anybody that is curious, if you go to Analogger, which is A-N-A-L-O-G, which is analogr.com, that's where this the preview will take place. And then the live auction starts on the 29th. And then the events will be displayed there. So if you happen to be in Los Angeles or want to tune in or come to any of these amazing events, it's going to be incredible.
Great. Well, you're an exciting new company. And of course, Mr. Fontaine, great collector. So thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. Take care of yourself and thanks again.
And we'll all talk soon. Bye now.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.